Finally, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Cassandra Gray, who is here. Thank you for your patience as we got through all of those things. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I am 16 years old, and I attend Westinghouse Arts Academy. I'm a literary major, so I write, and I'm hoping to become like a novelist whenever I'm older, but I do dabble in poetry and other forms of writing right now.
And Westinghouse Arts Academy is in Wilmerding,
yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
A charter school.
Yeah.
And relatively new, right?
Yeah, I think it's only been open for 3 years so far.
What community do you live in?
I just moved, actually. I live in, I think, around like Woodland Hills or
okay.
something. Yeah.
Okay, so that's close to where I grew up. Did you move from another city? Or?
No, I lived around like the Forest Hills area, so
okay.
pretty close to the Woodland Hills High School, but then we had to move recently because of like family arrangements and stuff.
Well, that's I was just curious because a charter school draws from so many different communities.
Yeah.
So you're out east still, mm-hmm. Similar to the school. So when did you discover your passion for writing?
That's a bit of a, it's kind of difficult to answer because I've always been interested in writing. Whenever I was younger, I really, like, I liked to write things that, like, based off of, like, movies that I would watch or, like, TV shows that I would watch or, like, just other books that I would read. But as I got older, I started wanting to, like, kind of write my own things probably around, like, 9 or 10 years old. And then I think more recently, honestly, like in the past 3 or 4 years was whenever I really started getting into it for myself and whenever I wanted to start writing novels. And actually, the reason, like the way that I found out that I wanted to be a novelist was actually my audition for the Westinghouse Arts Academy, because I wanted to go there to be a theater major, but I didn't have any experience in that field. So I wanted to audition with writing because I knew how to do that. And after I did that, it kind of just took off from there, and I discovered that I had way more of a passion for that than I knew before.
It's funny how that happens sometimes,
mm-hmm.
that you are exposed to something that has an unexpected consequence.
Yeah.
It sounds like you didn't realize how much writing suited you and your interests until that happened, and then
yeah.
it felt really comfortable. Well, Cassandra, do you prefer Cassandra or Cassandra?
Cassandra.
I thought Cassandra
yeah.
Gray has brought along a number of works, some poetry, also some prose. Would you like to share a poem?
Yeah, the first one that I'm going to share is called Life Field. Her fingers run along the life of the field, its shamrocks which have not yet bloomed. Her dark eyes set on the sinking pink orange of a near-dusk sun. A breeze tumbles by, rolling over her shoulders, dancing through the field of white and green and purple, replenishing her lungs, warning of the leaden storm to come. The air is muggy, tense and fallen lifeless again, but the storm of those demons unleashed will pass, and so will she. She will be gone. Those near-dusk breezes will continue, and the shamrocks will bloom.
That's beautiful. Do you get a chance to share your work aloud at Westinghouse?
Yeah. Last year, there was this like little coffee shop event that we did. We had we hired, like, the school hired people from, I think, a local coffee shop, and they came in, and they served coffee while we read on, like, the steps of our cafeteria. We also have, like, we've had other events where we're in the auditorium of the building, but last year I think it was, like, around 3 that we did. So I do have a couple opportunities.
That's good, I think. But it must be, it takes a lot of courage to share your own writing.
Yeah, it really does.
That way, so how... I don't know if you ever grow comfortable, if one ever grows comfortable with that, Cassandra. Did you need to? Must have been tough the first time.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely more difficult the first time than it is now. Like, you kind of grow into it, but at the same time, like, it's still, because every time whenever you're reading something or even, like, in a different field, like singing something or playing something, you're kind of, like, burying your soul in a way because it's something that you create and it's something that comes from you, and it's, like, that fear of rejection. If people don't like it, then, you know, it usually people will like what you present, but I think people just naturally, they get nervous that, you know, it's not going to be good enough or something like that. So there's definitely a fear there.
Yeah, and I think the cliche is that the biggest fear most people have is speaking in front of a group. And then you combine this with the fact that you're sharing your own either innermost thoughts or creative thoughts, which could be subject to judgment atop that, and that amplifies it to the point.
Yeah, it really does.
How did I'm imagining you've had mentors or teachers that have helped you sharpen your writing skills as well as presentation. Is that true? Are there people that have been helpful?
Yeah, there's my teacher from last year. I don't know if I can say her name.
Oh, I was just going to say, please.
Yeah,
please.
Yeah.
She'll be delighted.
Her name is Josette Curry. She helped me last year with, like, figuring out how to get over my anxieties. Whenever I was in her orientation class, which is basically like an introduction to getting into writing more, I wasn't really sure how to get past the initial, like, I guess, block that some people experience whenever they get into that sort of thing and, like, writing to, like, read in front of people. She helped me to, I guess, be more confident in my writing, to be able to actually get up and talk in front of people and share that, which I'm really grateful for, because I think it would have taken me much longer if I didn't have somebody like that to be able to help me with my writing that way.
That's great when you're able to run in or have somebody like that in your life. In fact, I was at a high school reunion a few weeks ago, and it was my 40th, so it was a long time. But we all were talking about three English teachers. They taught 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. Their names were Sarah Holgate, James Scrimma, and Harriet Panetta. And those three were amazing in encouraging creativity, good writing, and exposition, mm-hmm. and just sharing your thoughts. And we all kind of paused for a minute because we remembered just we're different people because of the time they spent with us. Let's have you share something else that you've brought, and that's totally up to you what you want to.
Yeah, this one's a bit more profound. I'm pretty sure it's called Blood Tulips. Yeah, the name is on the back of here. She places a red tulip against the metal table before them, down by his hand. The flower is shriveled, wrinkled almost beyond recognition on several of its twisted petals. Its color is a deep red, a contrast from the table atop which it sits. The color, she says, and his eyes lift to comply. His eyes, green, another contrast from those petals, are eyes which he has not yet seen, not since the drive wipe. Not since one of her other soldiers had rearranged the contents of him, the contents which made something like him, him, though he was not consciously aware. There was that creeping feeling of not knowing, of being shut out, left in the dark from his own self, but whatever guilt, whatever regret had plagued his inhuman mind had fallen away. Lifeblood, he responds, monotonous, detached, like your blood. There's a flash of something there behind those eyes, something that's been draining since the wipe, but it has fallen away, and the last of his attachments are disregarded. Her hand retreats with the blood tulip and returns with one that's dead, blackened beyond recognition of its former capacities. She says again, the color. He pauses, The large triangle betwixt both his artificial collarbones is winking an incandescent stream of purple. It hits the ceiling, penetrating the room's shadows, till its light flickers and stops. Black blood, he says, like my blood, and his veins recharge black.
Wow. What an interesting twist that took near the end. Both poems you've shared have a lot of colors in their imagery, I noticed. Is that something you think about a lot when you write?
Whenever I write something, I really like, I guess I imagine it kind of like how I would imagine a movie or something. I'm definitely a very visual person, and once I get the visuals in my mind of what I'm writing, it makes it a lot more easy for me to write it. So I don't think that I necessarily acknowledge the colors, but I really do like to add in as much description as I can, because I think, like, subconsciously, like, color makes a huge difference in how you, I guess, like, the mood or, like, the feel of the piece that you're reading. So I actually didn't really notice that until you mentioned that, so yeah.
That's interesting. So is it, I mean, I don't want to break down everything you're doing into something formulaic,
no,
but is it typical for you to first visualize the scene or the situation that supports what you're going to write and then write about it?
Yeah. I think I'm very much a planner, and I think that is like it comes as a part of the planning process for me. Usually, like, I'll, like, see something or I'll hear something, and, like, a random idea will just, like, come out from that thing that I see or hear, and then I'll, like, think about it a lot, and it'll kind of, like, play out in my head as, like, kind of a movie, sort of, and then I'll try to, like, get that down on paper as best I can.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, that's typically how that works for narrative pieces and, like, prose and stuff like that. Poetry, for me, is a bit less planned out. Usually I don't have to imagine the visuals as much, because poetry is a lot less of, it doesn't have to be tied up into a neat little bow, I guess you could say, as a lot of, like, novels and stories typically need to be. It can be a bit more, like, profound, and, like, you don't need to know exactly what it's about, because everybody can interpret that differently. So I don't typically imagine, like, a huge visual scene for a poem, but for a story, I 100% like to do that.
Do you draw or enjoy making art?
Yeah, I dabble in painting and drawing. I don't do it as much anymore just because of, like, time constrictions and stuff, but I definitely do like to do that every once in a while.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. I mean, there are definitely times I hear things in my head and I know exactly what I want to try to create in an audio form. But that's, you know, hearing things in an audio form to create something that's also in an audio form. To visualize something in imagery and then use that as the basis for something in text form is fascinating to me. I think that's very unique. What else do you like to do?
Like, in writing or
just as a person, just in general.
Well, I mean, I've always liked music a lot, so I play piano occasionally. I've been trying to get more into that lately, and because of the school that I go to, I'll hopefully be able to start classes with that soon. But I really like to kind of use music as a way to, like, escape into that, like, creative space in my brain, and that does help me write as well. Like I said, I do draw and paint sometimes, but typically I like to stick to writing or music or something like that, just to, like, because I think that it's very important for people to exercise, like, the creative space in their brain, because, you know, as you get older, it's not as prominent as, like, say, the analytical side, but I think it's definitely important, because that part of your brain can help you with a lot of different fields in life, not simply, like, art forms. So I like to try to exercise my brain as much as possible, I guess. I don't want to sound like, you know, weird about that. But like,
no, it's a good thing. We're going to have time for two more pieces, and I'd like you to do one now, and then we'll talk a little bit, and then have you close with one. If you're just joining us, this is Cassandra Gray. She's 16. She goes to Westinghouse Arts Academy in Wilmerding, and she is sharing original writing with us. And I can't wait to hear what we're going to hear next.
This one's a little bit longer. It's 4 pages. It's called Some Snow. For a couple seconds, I thought the sky was tumbling down. I thought I was going to be knocked over by the blue and the clouds, so I asked Mom why the sky was falling, and then she put a hand on my shoulder and told me, "It's snow, sweetie." She told me to hold out my hands, but I didn't really want to because it made me nervous. The flakes were flying down in tiny little shards, falling into the mounds of fluffy white powder, and then I realized how much they looked like cornflakes going into a sea of frozen milk. I stuck out my tongue, and they crashed into it and melted, and the cold on my tongue was gone the second after it came. And then I realized my tongue hurt, like millions and billions, no, gazillions of knives were stabbing me. Mom screamed a little after. She looked down at me and said my tongue was burning. It made sense when I saw the weird steam floating out of my mouth, but Mom didn't seem as confused as I was, because she got a pile of snow and stuffed it in my face. When she moved her arm, though, I saw her coat was smoking, and then she screamed again, but this time the smoke was coming from her eye, and a second later, her eye was gone. She shouted into the sky. Her hands flew back to her face. She fell into the snow and rolled around, but she didn't stop screaming, and neither did the other people who came outside. Some moved into the street, putting their hands on the backs of others. They looked scared, but not as scared as the ones that ran back into the houses. They looked like Mom. Then I saw the heads in the sky. They were floating, and they looked like they were screaming because their mouths were wide open and weird-looking, spilling black gooey stuff. But I didn't think they were making any sound. They just moved around the air, and the snow that fell into their mouths or their faces steamed and disappeared. I was looking at them for a while, so I didn't notice when the people got quieter, until I looked down to see them all looking up like I used to be, and they were walking around in weird circles that weren't really circles, like they were confused, like they were following a butterfly. I kept looking at one of the people for a long time. I thought she was older, her hair was gray and long. She didn't look like she was all that bothered by the steam floating from her hands. She just kept circling around, and the circle kept getting smaller until she stopped and said it was her face. "That's my face," she said. "That's my face." I was confused for a second, but she was looking up, and so I looked up, and I saw what she meant. The head floating above her, kind of like it was following a butterfly, had hairs like hers. And when it moved so I could see, I saw that it was her face, except for the eyes. The eyes looked different. The eyes looked dead. She kept doing the same thing over and over, because that head kept circling around, and so she followed it. And its eyes started to open up, and its mouth got so wide I thought it was going to swallow the sky. But it didn't. Instead, the goo started oozing from its face, opening up places I never even knew were there. I looked away then, because I didn't want to see what would happen, except when I did look away, it wasn't different, because everybody was walking in confused little circles, because some looked angry or sad, some looked confused or scared or frozen, and when I looked to the floating heads above them, they were all the same. It was all the same. And so I started to run inside. I didn't look back. I didn't look for Mom. I didn't look at my feet. I tripped. My face hit the little step on the porch, and I thought about crying, but that wasn't going to help. So I got back up and kept going for the door. But the door was gone, and all that was left was burning. I turned around. I looked at my feet and got off the step. I ran forward, but there was nothing to run to but the standing people, the still bodies, and the goo. There was nowhere to go, nowhere to look but up. So I looked up. And I felt sad, I felt scared, and I felt frozen, because I saw it. "That's my face," I said. "That's my face."
You really create some interesting situations.
Thank you.
I just put a picture of Cassandra up on Facebook. I wasn't checking my email while you were reading. I wanted to get a picture up there so people could see
you,
too. And I accidentally linked, unless you are a Spanish speaker, are you?
No.
Okay, there is a Spanish writer named, I started to tag you, and I saw somebody with a named Cassandra Gray with a pen. And I said, oh, that's got to be her, right? And I looked at that person's profile, and they are a writer, but every word of their profile was in Spanish.
Yeah.
So I corrected that. Cassandra Gray is 16 at Westinghouse Arts Academy. Before, assuming you'd like to share one more, is there anybody you would like to acknowledge, family? You mentioned a teacher before, but any family members or anyone else?
Yeah, my mom. It's kind of cliche.
No, but, it's good.
My mom has been extremely helpful to me in the past few years of my life. She's really, like, helped me and my siblings through a lot of tough stuff. And I think that definitely helped my writing because some of the harder stuff in life certainly, I guess, gets your creativity flowing because it helps with emotion and stuff. But having somebody there who, you know, actually who really does care about you and is willing to help you through a lot of that tough stuff can help clear your mind so that you, you know what direction you're going in. And I think that, yeah, I definitely, my mom has definitely been a huge help to me.
And is there anything else you would like to say or add before?
No, I think I'm good.
Great. Well, let's listen to your final poem. We're going to close with that. And whenever you're ready, please share away.
These breaths of contentment we breathe will not last forever. You and I will fade like the sun fades from the fields, and the shadows of clouds nearby fade from rooftops. Like the seasons move on, you will move on from me. And I will move on from you if I can imagine an outcome where your sunshine has left my shadow.
Cassandra Gray, thank you for being here.